This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Everybody is just bombarded by a lot of anti-Semitic or pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli content online. It's like all I get on Instagram Reels. And that can take a mental toll.
That was Brandon Leach of the American Jewish Coalition on how social media is producing highly polarized videos of the Israeli-Hamas conflict. Details coming up. Also, Israel says it's open to extending a truce with Hamas if the Palestinian group continues to release hostages. And Sierra Leone's authorities say they arrested assailants who attacked a military barracks. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Israel said today it was open to extending a truce with Hamas if the Palestinian group continues to release hostages, as international pressure mounted for a longer pause in the Gaza fighting. If no extension is agreed on, the temporary truce is due to expire at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, threatening a return to intense fighting in a war that has already left many thousands dead. U.S. President Joe Biden, top EU envoy Joseph Borrell, and NATO Secretary General have all joined a global chorus urging the parties to extend their four-day break in fighting. A fourth exchange of militant-held hostages for Palestinians imprisoned by Israel is planned for later today, but there are reports details of the lists of those being freed are still being worked out. Israel previously said it would extend the ceasefire by one day for every 10 additional hostages released. Hamas has also said it hopes to extend the four-day truce. The ceasefire came into effect Friday after several weeks of indirect negotiations mediated by the United States, Qatar, and Egypt. The conflict began on October 7th when Hamas militants attacked communities in Israel, killing about 1,200 people and taking about 240 hostages. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says more than 12,000 residents have died since the Israeli military began its bombardment and ground offensive in the territory. In addition, Israel blocked flows of food, fuel, and medicines into Gaza. As part of the truce, by exchanging hostages and prisoners, Israel agreed to allow hundreds of aid trucks into Gaza, although United Nations aid workers say the increased flow remains far short of what's needed. For more on the latest in the conflict between Israel and Hamas, I have on the line the reporter Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you, Yehia.
So, what is known about who might be released today?
Well, Hamas has given a list to Israel. Israel has notified the families, which means that Israel believes that the hostage release will go ahead. There are 11 names on the list. We still don't know who. There are still quite a few children missing. Now, the premier of Qatar said, told local press that that 10 of the children are being held by another group other than Hamas, and it's not clear if they will be able to be freed. There are two little boys. One is 10 months old and one is 4, both redheads who have kind of become the symbol of the hostage children, and their mother is with them. And so there's a lot of hopes that they will be on the list for tonight, but we still don't know.
So far, there's been nearly 50 hostages released and more than 100 Palestinian prisoners freed. What has been the reaction in Israel and Gaza and the West Bank?
Well, in Israel, I mean, you know, these hostages have become like people's families. I mean, there are posters of their faces all over. There was a rally in support of the hostage family Saturday night in Tel Aviv that attracted 100,000 people. So there's a tremendous amount of relief and happiness that especially the children have been released and apparently not harmed while in captivity, although some of them have certainly lost weight. On the Palestinian side, the prisoner issue is a very big issue for Palestinians. And so anybody who's able to release prisoners automatically gets kind of a boost. So the prisoners, the Palestinian prisoners, again, minors and women, some of them were held in administrative detention, meaning they hadn't been charged or tried. Some of the minors were involved in issues like throwing stones and things like that. But a couple of the women apparently were convicted of trying to stab Israeli soldiers but did not succeed. But it's given Hamas a boost in the West Bank, which is where these prisoners were released to. Interestingly, a poll showed that if there was an election today, there hasn't been an election among the Palestinians since 2006, but if there was an election today, Hamas would lose in Gaza but win in the West Bank.
Interesting. So, like I mentioned earlier, U.S. President Joe Biden, top EU envoy Joseph Borrell, and NATO Secretary General all joined a global chorus urging the parties to extend their four-day break in the fighting. So what has been the reaction there to rising international calls to extend the ceasefire?
Well, Israel has said that it would extend the ceasefire, you know, as long as Hamas continues to release the hostages. And now there's talk of a, you know, two-day extension, which would lead to 20 more hostages being free, as well as 60 more Palestinian prisoners. That said, Israel insists that if it stopped now, it would basically be leaving Hamas in power, and that as soon as the ceasefire expires, whenever that is, Israel is going to launch an incursion into southern Gaza. Until now, all of the fighting has been in northern Gaza, but Israel says that Hamas still has thousands of fighters and hundreds of tunnels running underneath, like the tunnels that we saw exposed in the last couple of weeks. So Israel seems pretty intent on finishing this operation. It says its goal is to make sure that Hamas will never be able to pose a military threat to Israel. That said, there is, as you said, there is growing international pressure. And I think the key is really the United States. I don't think that Israel cares that much about what the EU says or what the United Nations says. But if President Biden is, you know, really turning up the pressure on Israel, it's going to be much harder for Israel to continue. So I'm sure that there are a lot of, you know, behind-the-scenes negotiations trying to convince him of why Israel believes that it needs to continue.
And lastly, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu toured the Gaza Strip on Sunday and vowed, you know, the return of all the hostages. What is the significance of him actually going into Gaza?
Well, it's sort of a sign of showing that he feels safe enough to go into Gaza, that he feels, you know, that Israel controls the area enough. A lot of journalists have been going into Gaza as well with the army to see some of these tunnels that the army has uncovered. That said, there's a lot of flack against Netanyahu. Israelis are very frustrated with how he both has handled the war and even how he allowed the intelligence failure that led to the war to happen. And unlike some of the heads of the army and the security services, Netanyahu has refused to accept responsibility. The polls, by the way, show that if the election were held today, Netanyahu would lose to Benny Gantz, who's a former chief of staff, who's sort of more of a centrist. But a lot of people also say, you know, you don't switch horses in the middle of a war. So at least for now, Netanyahu remains the prime minister, although he's certainly not popular in Israel.
Reporter Linda Granstein in Jerusalem, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Social media is giving young people across the world instant and almost unlimited access to both sides of the Israeli-Hamas conflict that hardens their opinions, unlike their parents in earlier major geopolitical conflicts. VOA's Anthony Labruto looks into how social media is impacting young people's perception of the war and their own place within it.
Never in history has the world been so connected to itself. Especially for young people, social media has provided unrestricted access to information, opinion, and world events. In the Israel-Hamas war, cell phones capture it all. Seeing the good, the bad, and the truly horrific, and not knowing what to do, can be extremely overwhelming when far removed from the situation.
Everybody is just bombarded by a lot of anti-Semitic or pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli content online, it's like all I get on Instagram Reels. And that can take a mental toll. I would say also, like, it's a really scary situation to be in as a young student.
College campuses around Washington, D.C. have allowed students to find other like-minded people, either on the pro-Israel or pro-Palestine side, who want to take action and compel leaders to do something about the war. What that solution looks like, though, is different on all sides, and finding community has been essential. Especially within the nation's capital, communities of Israelis and Palestinians alike have converged multiple times on the National Mall to express outrage.
I have all of my father's direct relatives in Gaza today.
And you betrayed us.
They have been displaced from their homes. Some of their homes have been bombed.
That's how we feel.
They are living without food, water, electricity, and fuel. Situation is very desperate and devastating. We are awaiting any moment to receive bad news that their homes have been struck. Our community here, Palestinian American community, as you can see in the thousands, people have come out to express their outrage.
In a recent report, popular social media application TikTok asserts that the recommendation softwares used in its video streaming are not inherently biased, but note that videos containing the hashtag Free Palestine outnumber those with the hashtag I Stand With Israel by 2.5 million as of November 13th. The social media application also points to long-standing intergenerational research from Pew Research that shows older generations, who are less likely to be present on the app, are more likely to support Israel than younger generations. But other young people see this division of identity online as an opportunity for connection. Maxwell Katz and his business partner, Fareed Abdibi, started Left Middle Right, a digital media organization founded on George Washington University's campus that aims to help college students and other younger people articulate their thoughts.
And I'm sure there are people radicalized on both sides, but the majority are just more involved and are more reflective of who they are and where their roots are. And if both sides just really sat in a room, let's say GW for Israel and Students for Justice in Palestine, and they talked for an hour, they'd realize that, like, they don't hate each other. They don't have an issue with their belief system. It's just a matter of their identities that clash at a geopolitical stage.
While a temporary ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is scheduled to end, social media companies and their users will continue to navigate their own identities in today's interconnected world. Anthony Labruto, VOA News, Washington.
Sierra Leone's authorities say they have arrested assailants who attacked a military barracks in the capital city, Freetown, on Sunday, as tensions remain high in the West African country since President Julius Mada Bayo was re-elected in June. For Reuters, Almand Lee reports.
Gunfire was heard across Sierra Leone's capital on Sunday after assailants attacked a military barracks in the early hours of the morning. The government said security forces had repelled, quote, renegade soldiers who attempted to break into the military armory in Freetown. Gunmen also attacked a police station and a prison, and some prisoners escaped. Hours later, President Julius Mada Bio addressed the nation.
The attackers have been repelled by a combined team of gallant security forces, and calm has been restored. Most of the leaders have been arrested. Security operations and investigations are ongoing. We will ensure that those responsible are held accountable through due process.
The unrest prompted authorities to impose a nationwide curfew. Tension has been boiling in the West African country since Bio was re-elected in June, a result rejected by the main opposition candidate and questioned by international partners, including the United States and the European Union. In August last year, at least 21 civilians and 6 police officers were killed in anti-government protests. In his Sunday night address, Bio called on Sierra Leone's political and traditional leaders and civil society to work together to preserve peace.
That was Almand Lee reporting for Reuters. In Sierra Leone, a leading human rights defender says President Mada Bayo's speech to the nation appears to have calmed the situation after gunmen attacked the main military barracks yesterday. Abdul Fatoma is the executive director of the group called Campaign for Human Rights and Development. He reports that the government says investigations are ongoing to arrest all those involved. His remarks come after President Bayo announced the arrest of most of the attackers who carried out the assault on the country's military base and prisons. The barracks is close to the presidential lodge and the office of the vice president. For the latest development and analysis, VOA's Peter Cloete reached Abdul Fatoma in the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
This morning, the government put out a statement readjusting the curfew order. Now, curfew start at 6 a.m. and end at 9 p.m. So, meaning citizens have right to be out within 6 a.m. in the morning, and by 9 p.m. at night, you should be indoors. The Minister of Information says that the security will continue to do their operations until they are fully in control, then they will return life to normalcy back.
Did the president's speech last night calling on political leaders, religious groups, civil society, to unite as a country against what he called attempt to destabilize the peace, calmed nerves in Sierra Leone?
Yes, the president actually emphasizing and stressing the victory by pushing these people out of the city and opening the country back today. He crowned it to all Sierra Leonean that we have claim victory over those who attempt to attack our democracy and, you know, put this country under instability. And then calling on civil society, religious leaders, political leaders, to come on board to fight against these enemies that want to bring instability to our country. So that helps to calm down a lot of nerves. And there's a little bit of changes in the tonation of government this time around than the previous protest or alleged coup by them. Because by them, he was saying that they know the people, they will go after them, they will hit them harder. And they know exactly it's coming from a group of politicians. But this time around, he's not blaming a group of political activists or a group of political groups at this moment. He's only calling on the nation and stakeholders to come on board to fight against these people.
Well, there are suggestions. Last year during the protest, the government called it an attempt to overthrow the administration. But this time around, you know, an attack was carried out, the prisoners released. The attack occurred at a military installation where the attackers allegedly took weapons, and the attack basically happened close to the presidential lodge, where the vice president's residence was also nearby with other diplomatic missions. Why are they not calling it an attempted coup this time? What is the analysis here? Talk to me about it.
That's the confusion among citizens here and analysts and political analysts and international, you know, security experts in Sierra Leone. Because the Amourage was the attack, and then ammunitions were taken away, and vehicles, military vehicles, and they used those ammunitions also to break the prison and release prisoners, both from the female correctional center and also the male correctional center. And by then, government already has imposed a curfew order, you know, that we should not have people outside moving around. But the released prisoners were out working, you know, peacefully with no interruption, going to their, you know, different destinations. And then, you know, this very area, it's very close to the World Bank headquarters in Sierra Leone, the British High Commission, the Vice President office, as you rightly said, and very close to the presidential lodge and that of the U.S. Embassy as well. So, I mean, it's scary to see that a group of people attack the military barracks and took away arms and ammunition and used those arms, ammunition, and military vehicles to cause more havoc, you know, across the city. And also adopted police personnel.
That was Abdul Fatoma speaking with VOA's Peter Kloti. The Malawi government has partnered with the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, and a mobile service provider to help students in rural Malawi learn how to use the latest digital technology. Lamek Masina reports from central Malawi.
Learners at Lintipe Secondary School in central Malawi are among thousands in nine schools across the country, selected as the first beneficiaries of a five-year project to help students learn the latest digital technology. Here, the children feel transformed just 3 months into the project. Joanna Genesis is a student at Lintipe Secondary School in Malawi.
At first, I didn't know how to use a gadget, but now I am now able to use the gadget. Even our teacher can teach us how to make things. We cannot agree that it's true because we don't know how to make it. But when we see it using the gadgets, we are able and truly understand the meaning of making things.
Government statistics show that 4% of 15 to 24-year-olds in Malawi have skills in information and communication technologies. This is largely because of the high cost of buying internet data and lack of access to resources for digital education. So partners in the Connect a School project, the Malawi government, UNICEF, and the mobile phone network provider Airtel Malawi are trying to address that gap by equipping each school with a smart TV, tablets, and free internet connectivity. Nora Chavula Chirwa with Airtel Malawi says the company is providing schools with free internet access and that the new apps are helping to make up for a lack of resources at some schools.
I mean, where there's a hindrance or an obstacle of not having a physical lab, now the students are able to actually run experiments, run physics experiments using the MyLab app that the Ministry of Education has facilitated that these tablets should have.
MyLab is a visual science lab application developed by students at Nzuzu University in northern Malawi. Some school officials say more tablets are needed for the project. Nova Kantuzi is the head teacher at Lintipe Secondary School.
The total enrollment of the school is 350, around 350 students. But the gadgets, the tablets, are only 20, which means one is for the teacher and the 19 are for the students. And now, how effective can we use these gadgets with the students?
Malawi government authorities say they are trying to get more tablets. Chomora Mikeka is the Director of Science, Technology and Innovation in Malawi's Ministry of Education.
Right now, as I'm speaking, there's a procurement process taking place to buy devices to run MyLab in selected schools, and this will be glowing.
In the meantime, Mikeka says the government has signed a letter of intent with the International Telecommunications Union, UNICEF, and the GIGA Initiative to provide digital resources to over 8,000 public schools in Malawi by 2030. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Dedza District, Malawi.
Around the world, people are marking the United Nations 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Help us mark the work to end violence against women by sharing your thoughts on VOA's English to Africa radio programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076, before December 10th. Tell us what is being done in your community to fight gender-based violence and tell us why this issue is important to you. That number again is +1 202 258 3076.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.